I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, Schanowski, I heard what you said.
Mark Schanowski.
I've seen a handful of different times where there was video of him lighting up Jamokes in pickup games.
NBC Sports Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host.
Mr. Carter to you.
The most interesting man in the world.
I'm coming for you, man. You heard it here first.
Mark Schanowski with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
He's on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. He is on NBC Sports Chicago in and around Chicago Bulls games, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. We are at the midway point of the Bulls season. They've got 10 wins to show for it. What have they accomplished, Mark?
They haven't really accomplished a whole lot. Obviously, they're trying to build chemistry between the three players that they acquired in the Jimmy Butler deal, plus Wendell Carter Jr. We're starting to see a little bit of progress in that area, but you know they've changed coaches. They've had a ton of injuries. They've spun their wheels. I guess the only thing you can say that's really tangibly accomplished is there's not going to be a 30-win season and talk of trying to fight for the eighth seed. They're totally into the rebuild and hoping they'll get some lottery luck this May.
Of late, it feels like Jim Boylan has opened up the offense a little bit, or at least from where it was. I guess it's not that hard. It was pretty much locked down. What have you seen as far as actual real tangible change to pace and space and speed?
Well, I think a lot of those changes came from above. You know, there have been reports that he was talked to by both John Paxson and Doug Collins in terms of letting these young athletes run a little bit because the Bulls rank 30th, dead last in pace, and they rank dead last in most major offensive categories. And in today's NBA, where I don't know if you guys got a chance to see that Spurs-Thunder game last night, you know, this is such a fun league right now where teams are running and shooting threes and putting up incredible point totals, and you're playing a completely different style, trying to play an old-fashioned inside-out game and milking the shot clock and, you know, trying to emphasize defense and road dog mentality and all those things. And it's very difficult to win that way unless you play a perfect game. And when you have a young team, you're very rarely going to play a perfect game.
For the first time, we are seeing this core get extended opportunities together. And Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. And it's in fits and starts. Sometimes it looks like it can work. Other times I'll go several possessions and wonder, you know, why hasn't Lowry touched the ball or why isn't he getting early touches in the shot clock? And the substitution patterns sometimes don't make sense to me. How can the Bulls maximize the development opportunity for the players that matter?
Yeah, I think we got a little inkling yesterday into what's going on with Lauri Markkanen. Jim Boylan just happened to mention in passing that elbow injury was more serious than what a lot of people might realize, that he's finally starting to feel closer to 100%, that when he initially came back, he was a little bit wary of contact, about going to the rim strong. We've seen that in his performance. You know, especially early on, he was kind of floating around the three-point line, didn't seem like he was willing to put the ball on the floor and absorb contact at the rim. I think right now, you know, my partner Kendall Gill has mentioned a couple of times that he just needs to be more aggressive. You know, he has to forget about whatever pain he might be experiencing, and he has to just play all out. I mean, if the pain is too much, then you just take yourself out of the lineup. But when he's out there, he needs to command the ball. He needs to demand touches in the paint and closer to the basket and not just settle for being a weak side option to shoot threes. There have been a lot of games where he shot, you know, 8 to 10 shots, and if he's supposed to be the focal point of your future, he needs to be more aggressive. I think Chris Dunn has shown some signs of growth. I like what he can do offensively in terms of getting into the paint and being able to either finish at the rim or set up guys, set up some of his teammates for open shots. And Zach has been pretty good. You know, obviously he has some issues on the defensive end, but, you know, I think the problem right now is these guys don't really know how to play off each other, and that's what's going to be the most important thing over these final 41 games. They have to find out who's going to be critical to their long-term success and who maybe can be involved in a trade for somebody better.
What's the best course of action, Mark, with Jabari Parker at this point? And what do the Bulls think they're achieving by not playing him?
Well, unfortunately, this has been handled so poorly that it's been bad for all parties. And, you know, we saw the photo that Casey Johnson snapped the other day after shoot-around with Jim Boylan with his iPad talking to Jabari. It looked like Jabari was a million miles away mentally. I mean, that photo, you know, spoke volumes about the relationship between Jabari and the Bulls right now. Last two games, they played 12 of their 13 active players. Jabari was the one exception. He's not even getting in at the end in blowouts, which is probably the right thing considering his pedigree in the league, and you don't really want to throw him out there in garbage time. But I think that if we get past the trade deadline and nothing's done, I think that they will look at a buyout situation and send him home. It just really doesn't suit anybody's purposes for him to suit up knowing he's not going to play unless some disaster occurs.
I was watching you and Kevin Anderson kind of go a little bit on Twitter, or at least he mentioned on Twitter as you guys were doing the cap space for the Bulls, and obviously Jabari plays into that. How have they arranged themselves for future money, as best as you can tell?
Well, they're in great shape. They should have close to $40 million in cap space for this upcoming summer. The only variable there is the Bobby Portis cap hold, which right now is a little over $7 million. They'll have to decide organizationally whether they want to commit to Bobby Portis. You know, he missed so many games this year. They made a very fair contract offer to him when they had the chance to extend him. Now they have to decide, are they still going to come back with that same offer, or will they lower that considering all the games he's missed and what his marketability may be around the league? But bottom line is, if they could somehow attract a max player, they have the money to do it. But I know we all know how familiar they've been with unsuccessful they've been with trying to get major free agents. And I just don't know with, you know, given their current situation, given some of the dysfunction during the season, how they could possibly sign a major free agent this summer.
I want to go back to something you said about how the Jim Boylan was being pressured to play big boy offense, that John Paxson, Doug Collins, people above him said, wait a second, you got to speed it up. Didn't they have some understanding when they made this move? I mean, how can you install a head coach without asking the head coach what his plan is going to be? Like, did this catch people by surprise? Or was this a whim? Did Boylan just wake up one day and say, we're going to slow this down? How could there already be sort of an action to remediate a coaching decision this early in his tenure?
Well, I'm sure there were many conversations that occurred between Boylan and either John Paxson or Gar Forman about how he would run the team, because, you know, there had been some unrest over the last year plus over Fred Hoiberg's long-term future with the franchise. So I'm sure the front office had a really good understanding of what he was going to bring in. And I think that the way the Bulls were playing so offended the sensibilities of John Paxson that he wanted a complete 180 in terms of approach. And I think the biggest thing that they wanted Jim Boylan Institute was a change in culture. He wanted guys to work harder in practice. He wanted to work harder on the defensive end, wanted them to care. We've heard him so many times talk about the Bulls on the front of your jersey. And I think it's more about a culture change than any kind of X's and O's or strategy. And I think they were willing to go along with the idea of, we're going to try to win it on the defensive end. But when they saw that wasn't working, then he got a nudge that, you know, listen, you're starting a lineup of five guys under the age of 24. Maybe they'll have some success pushing the ball instead of walking it up every time.
Mark, you mentioned how important it is, obviously, to get the playing time for that three-player core together. Chris Dunn's, I think by most people's estimation, the most tenuous of whether or not that's a core-type player. Obviously, in the contract that Zach LaVine does, he's not the rookie that Lauri Markkanen is, or second-year player that Lauri Markkanen is. Where is Chris Dunn in terms of being a core player to your estimation?
Well, I think the one thing he's got to show over these last 41 games is that he can stay healthy. He's been in and out of the lineup since he arrived in Chicago, and if you're not available, you're not going to be critical to what the team is trying to build. I think that defensive mentality he brings is something that obviously fits with what Jim Boylan is trying to run, but even no matter who the coach is, I think you need somebody at that lead guard position who is going to be a leader, who is going to try to unite the team, who's going to call out the right coverages on defense, who's going to be a guy who makes sure that the top players get their shots. And I think he's growing in that area. You know, I think when he first came back from his first injury, he was trying to prove that he could be a scorer, because most of the successful guards, point guards in the NBA, have turned into scoring lead guards. And I think that with this team, they need him to be more of a facilitator. And that's something that we have to see, that he can make sure that Lowry's getting his touches, that LaVine is involved in the offense, it doesn't disappear for a quarter at a time, And I think that's on him as kind of the coach on the floor. He's going to be evaluated very critically over these last half of the season, because when you look at the upcoming draft, everyone assumes they're going to take a wing, but they could go point guard. Kemba Walker is one guy who may be obtainable in free agency. He appeared on a national TV show earlier this week, and he was asked about his relationship with the front office and Michael Jordan, and he said, well, those guys know what they have to do. We've talked. And that's kind of an ominous statement when a star player says that, because that means obviously he's thinking about the possibility that I'll never win here. Maybe I have to go somewhere else to do it. So if somehow you get lucky in the lottery and get Zion Williamson and then follow that up with a signing of Kemba Walker, then you got something going with this team.
We've been ripping on management as deserved for a lot of their personnel mistakes that we were pointing out in the previous segment, but I give them credit for moving Jimmy Butler when they did and getting what they got for him, because now in hindsight, Jimmy Butler almost single-handedly destroyed the Tom Thibodeau regime there, took some trust in him that Thibodeau demonstrated, and just melted everything down. And there are whispers already that he may be trying to do the same thing in Philadelphia. Kudos to the Bulls for recognizing that they had to move on from that in the way that they did, and even give themselves a chance at trying to reconstruct a core, because it, watching what Butler is doing, just cutting a swath through this league and leaving nothing but death and destruction in his wake, is quite a thing to see.
Yeah, especially where in regards to Tom Thibodeau. I mean, Tom Thibodeau, as head of basketball operations, really mortgaged the franchise and put his own job on the line to acquire Jimmy with what the packages gave up to the Bulls. And then, you know, after one season of barely squeaking into the playoffs, Jimmy decides he doesn't want to be there anymore and forces the trade, and ultimately leads to Tom Thibodeau being fired. Just a horrible example of what this guy's all about, that Thibs showed the ultimate confidence in him to make him the franchise player, and then Jimmy said no thanks and just wrecked that franchise. And as you mentioned, now he's going to Philadelphia and question his role. It's only a matter of time before him and Embiid get into some kind of major dust-up. And you know, you have to wonder, with Elton Brand taking over as general manager there, if they're even going to want to commit the kind of dollars they'd have to commit to keep him long-term. I can't imagine Philadelphia's going to offer him a five-year max deal, paying him well over $40 million into his mid-30s, given his track record. And I think Jimmy and his agent are probably going to be disappointed in the number of offers they get. It only takes one team, and I'm sure one team will offer him, you know, the four-year max deal that they can. But I'm sure quickly into that, they'll probably be very disappointed.
Speaking of dust-up, we saw the Celtics get into it with a little friendly fire.
Yeah.
I guess a team meeting, Kyrie says, has kind of cleared the air. We talked, Mark, I think, I forget if it was the first or like second week of the season where we talked and mentioned the surprise in the Celtics' slow start. But like that we all kind of assumed, I think, that it would resolve itself. I don't know that it has.
Sometimes you can have too much talent and too many expectations for guys that they should be the man. And, you know, while it was very encouraging for Boston to see the way Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown stepped up with all the injuries last year in the playoffs, almost getting that team to the finals, now with Kyrie coming back and Gordon Hayward back, you know, there's been a lot of my turn, your turn offense. And Kyrie is a guy who's very, very strong-headed as your star player. He feels like he's a top 10 player in the NBA and should be getting all the touches when it matters. And Jason Tatum, coming off his season, feels like he's the star of the future in Boston, and it really hasn't worked out. Brad Stevens has gotten kudos throughout his NBA coaching career for being able to run a great offense, getting guys touches and keeping everybody happy. But to this point, it really hasn't worked. You know, it was funny how they scored 135 points and everything looked good when they beat Indiana a couple nights ago, and then they come back with an absolute stinker in Miami. So there are a lot of teams trying to find their identity even in the upper regions of the Eastern and Western conferences. And I think that's why the playoffs are going to be fascinating. If Golden State continues to struggle, this could be as wide open as we've seen it in a long time.
Mark, thank you. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. We've got the game tonight on NBC Sports Chicago. Hey, you don't know what might happen. I mean, maybe Clay will score 60 points on two dribbles tonight, so we'll find out.
Watch that.
Mark Schanowski, NBC
Mark.
Sports Chicago.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.